You're listening to RIA Radio, the nationally trusted name in real estate investing. We dig deep to discover investors' why in real estate. If you want to skip all the BS and get in investors' heads, you're in the right spot. Be one of the thousands to check out RIAradio.com.
Hey, do you mind? I want to hit on a topic here that you kind of touched on earlier, where you mentioned that you had some difficulty with the Florida house, and you made the decision to basically sell some things in Omaha to recapitalize so you could buy out the partners in the deal. And it sounded to me like you bought the house in Florida with one intention in mind, and you needed to have some financial partners involved because you had other business, like you had your assets allocated elsewhere, mm-hmm. right? So you bought out of need with the resources you had, meaning people, and then you recouped basically your dream by buying out those partners because you wanted it. So mm-hmm. it's need and then want. And then what I wanted to highlight with this is, You were able to put a deal together out of you found it through your resources, you sourced the financing and capital through your connections, put the deal together. It didn't work out exactly how you wanted, but in the big picture, it was exactly what you wanted. And what you really wanted was to have no partners in the deal, and you made that happen through necessity.
Yeah.
But what I want to come back to out of all this is, you've been doing this since what was the year you first got involved in real estate?
So I got my real estate license in 2000, the summer of 2000 in Arizona.
So 23 years as of today.
Yeah.
And what I want to highlight out of this is, it's not like you guys are broke. I mean, you mentioned you were like running out of money.
Asset rich, cash poor, right?
Yeah. And so here's what is where I want to go with this whole thing is, I've been involved in real estate since 2005, and I've gone through multiple periods. And this is even during times where I had, you know, a six-figure job. My wife had a six-figure job, and like, you know, we're fine, right? Like, we're operating just like a normal, you know, quote unquote normal American, in that we're trying to get by, we're trying to do better, we're trying to make as much as we can out of what we have and get a better, you know, just do better in life, right? Incrementally. And then, but also, by the way, like, we figured out, or we discovered real estate and started investing in that along the way. It's not a overnight success story for anyone in this business. It's never that way. It appears that way. And if you're following anybody on social media, it sure seems like, oh, wow, must be nice. Like, must be nice, because you have all these opportunities and you're fortunate because of all this. And it's like, what I want people to take away from this is that even if you've been doing this business for almost 20 years, you are going to get into cash crunches over time where it feels like you have freaking nothing. Like, it feels like I'm almost destitute, yet you look at your balance sheet and you have maybe millions of dollars of assets and or net worth, right? Yeah. And everybody goes through this. Yeah. I don't think people understand that.
No.
Like, because when you start out in this business, and I don't know about you, and I don't want to put my stuff on you guys, but tell me if I'm wrong here. When I first started out, I was like, I want more. Like, I want something more. I don't feel like I can get what I want out of this. And I read all the books, and I did, you know, I did all the research, and I always still felt like I was one paycheck away or one something away from just like disaster. You know what I mean? Yes. It's like, you never feel good the whole time. You never feel good. I think that's what people chase. It's almost like a heroin addict, right?
But yeah. I think that's true.
I think there's a comfort level that sometimes people need to have in their bank account. I had an interesting conversation with my dad a couple nights ago, and he was talking about having cushion levels. Like, he's like, well, I was had a number that had to be in my account where I felt like that was zero. And so he's been super successful the last couple of years in his new company that he's gotten, and his numbers increased substantially. But at one point he's like 10,000, that was zero to me. And he goes, that's broke. And he always pretended like that number didn't exist in his account.
Yeah.
And I think that we all kind of have that number that we want to see in our account to have that comfort level, you know, where like, hey, if that is in my account, I feel like I feel comfortable. I feel like I can do what I got to do, and I don't need to check my account every day. Mm-hmm. And I think that we, it kind of depends on where we come from in past.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true.
Because our foundation and our beliefs about money are created when we're little. You know, how you grew up, and mine was, you know, money doesn't grow on trees. And my mom went behind us shutting off the light switches because, you know, and now that I pay the electric bill, I'm like, really? Does that make that much of a difference?
I send the kids back in today to turn off all the lights. I'm like, you left three lights on. And I made them get out of the car and go turn those lights off.
Was that because your dad and mom were like that when you were growing up?
You know, we were always really tight for money, you know, yeah. There was a part of my childhood where we didn't have a bed and we slept on the floor. You know, there's things that, you know, and I value all of those things in my life because it's made me the person I am today. And I value the things I am today. And I think that because I have certain fears and I work extra amount of hours because I never want to go through that again.
So I've contemplated this a lot lately after everything that we just went through, because I have a coach, mentor. I think everybody should have one. You know, I liken it to professional sports athletes have coaches in most areas of their lives today. And so, and my coach, you know, I'm like, we're poor, we can't affect. And she was like, okay, take a deep breath and let's look at this from a 50,000 foot view. You're not poor. You know, like we do have millions on the balance sheet. Like maybe I had to call my bookkeeper today to. There have been times where I've had to been like, Christina, can I get a coffee today? but it's not even that bad. You know, it's no longer that bad. But it is kind of like you said, Ted, like what's that threshold level? And I had to be really honest with myself, like what we have is a lot. And why am I feeling like it's not, you know, like why does your dad feel like 10,000 is zero? Like, you know, I had to really be honest, like, okay, this is ridiculous the way that I'm talking to myself about it. And I had to let that go. And now don't get me wrong. While we were building our real estate empire, and all these businesses, we didn't keep money. Like we didn't keep a cushion because we knew the
you had confidence in yourself, yeah. And you knew you were going to generate more.
Yeah, I knew we're hustlers. I know we can do it. We'll figure it out is basically our motto. And if we had 20 grand in the bank and a great deal came up, we were buying the great deal. I would never say no if I had money in the bank and it was a great deal. Mm-hmm. And that's what allowed us to scale fairly well. I wouldn't call it quick. I've seen a lot of people go quickly. And then you hear they're having problems because they went so quickly. We've had times in our businesses where it grew really fast and then we had to rein it back in to, you know, set the solid foundation to be able to move forward. And I think that's kind of always happening. There's always those adjustments.
Calibration.
I feel like you guys did it a little differently. And Owen, I could even say this for you too, but one of my jobs was to source the deals that you guys renovated and flipped. And you guys did a ton of flipping for years to build up the bank accounts to get the holding assets, where I feel like a lot of the newbies that are in it are not doing those jobs. They're not building their – yeah. Well, not even refi. They're just getting loans, period. And, you know, they don't have a lot of cash put down.
Yeah.
You know, I'm following that to a point, but I'm going slow, you know, low and slow, and I'm buying right, you know. So a lot of these guys just buying anything.
Well, that's the point. I learned that from the beginning is you make money when you buy. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to buy it right. So I don't think when we started, though, that, like, cash out refinances was really a thing. Like, it kind of started a few years afterwards, but we did. We wanted to have more cash. We wanted to have the cash to, like, be able to put down on bigger things. And then even when you don't have the cash, but you have at that point a bigger portfolio, there's always money coming in and going out. I also had to look at it as if, you know, like, we kind of touched on this too, but I get really tired of being in the real estate investor rooms where it's a bunch of meathead guys, like basically having a pissing contest with each other. It's all about ego. And like, I have 20,000 units and like, Like, do you have a wife and kids? Like, what's the rest of your life like? I don't, you know, like, that's me. Like, I come in.
That's kind of what our podcast is about. You know?
And so I want to know that kind of stuff. Like, I want to know, like, what's the purpose? Because I'm not going to lie. There was a point in my life where I dreamt about real estate commissions. I would calculate commissions on the deals in my head. Like, how much money are we going to get? And when are we getting it? Constantly. But for what point? You know, like, when we were doing the Florida house, it was like, okay, I'm uncomfortable because of the amount in the bank account is dwindling. And why do I need it? Like, the whole point of money is to fund your lifestyle. And like I said earlier, we want to travel. We want to live other places. We want to do crazy things. You know, we want to be like, yeah, we're going to go jump off the stratosphere and not worry about being able to do it. And as long as you have the money to do those things, what's the point of having $1 million sitting in the bank account? You know, why do you need that to feel comfortable? And you could die tomorrow and never have done the things that you said you wanted to do just because you were building up this huge amount. And again, I would just challenge everybody to really look at that. Like, what's the point? And if it's lifestyle, like, sit down and say, how much do I really need to do this lifestyle?
I think that it's also part of it is that not everybody's like you and has their spouse on board.
That's a big thing. And I think about that a lot because I know, like, I have a really high risk tolerance. Mike has a really high risk tolerance. And I know that's not the case for you.
Yeah.
You know, Jessica's a lot more conservative. And that's great too. And there's times in our journey together where I wish I was more like Jessica. You know, it would be less of a bumpy ride, you know, but I don't know, for me and Mike, it's like, do we want a less bumpy ride? Sometimes I would appreciate that, but we also want the excitement. We kind of like the roller coaster, you know, to some degree.
Well, there's one thing Owen, I think you said it. I think you told me that every deal that you do, you take a portion of cash, give it to your wife.
I used to before that was while she had a full-time job, yeah. Also, so I could, because, you know, like, we were both super busy and she was just as busy as me, if not more, with her actual career, right? And she was traveling, and it was like, you know, all, like, we did the best we can. It was just like zone coverage, right? I would take the kids to school when she wasn't in town and vice versa. And then but I wanted, what was hard for me originally was translating what my vision was into things that she could digest and make sense out of mentally, mm-hmm. right? Like, why are you doing? All she knew was, you're gone.
Yeah.
And I'm blocking and tackling with the kids, probably literally, yeah. right? And so I had to manage that. And I was like, look, so this wasn't the right answer, but it was an answer. And I said, okay, I want you to, like, understand or, like, get a tangible benefit from what I'm doing for all of this. And I'm not going to sit here and say I'm doing this all for the family, because I think that's also a fallacy. Mm-hmm. I think it's, I'm pursuing my dream, and it's, yes, of course, it's a blanket thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you're in my camp, then I care about all of you, and I'm doing this for all of us. But really, I'm doing it because I'm determined, and I want to make the most out of this. And I think that's, does this make sense?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you hear a lot of people that say, like, oh, I'm doing this for my family and whatever, and I would challenge somebody that says that all the time, because that's not why you originally get into things. People, it's really not.
People aren't all true. We're all egotistical. Yeah. We're yes. not always altruistic. Now, family can be one of the top values. And, like, Mike is really 100%. Good about that. And so a lot of times he'll sit down and go, okay, I want this to be about our family. And I, like, just the last 2 weeks, he was gone like 10 days out of the last 2 weeks.
Sorry.
So he's, yeah, thanks, Dad. So he's not traveling the whole next month because that's what his top value. And so, you know, that's good. I also think it's important for children to see their parents pursuing their dreams, you know?
Amen. Mm-hmm. I believe that 100% too. But, like, getting back to put a bow on this. So my thought was, like, I feel like I'm doing, I was kind of going through this like phase where I was having some wins, right? Like, I would flip a house and I would do really well. And I would tell Jen about it. And she's like, and I'm putting myself in her mindset at the time, because she was like, you know, she's busy as hell and traveling, and she's got the kids, and not she doesn't have the kids, but I mean, like, we obviously are both dealing with all that, but she was kind of like, that's great, good job, let's, what, you know, like, what are we doing next week, you know, type thing. And I finally was like, look, okay, I want to put this and make it tangible. And I was like, here's $1,000 every time I did a flip, like, successful transaction, here's $1,000. It started adding up after a while. And I think, and I don't want to put my stuff on her, but I feel like she kind of got why I was so determined about all this. And then after time, and this goes back to, like, everybody that's been in real estate for a certain amount of time says, time heals all wounds in real estate if you buy and hold, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I was flipping, but and flipping and giving a little bit of transactional income to show, like, here's proof of concept, here's what we did, why I'm doing what we're doing, and then also we're stacking assets,
yeah,
over time, and then over time they start paying off, and then your tenants are paying your mortgage and your expenses, and then your
equity's
growing. Yeah, your equity's just growing like crazy, and inflation has taken care of a lot of, you know, a lot of probably not great decisions that I made back then.
Yeah, well, that, I think that you said that time heals all wounds. I think we all go through that. And also, she was able to retire because probably that business, right? So that's a really tangible thing. I mean, that's great. And I know I've met her, and I know I feel like she's very on board with the whole thing now. And right, but like, when you're doing your own thing, because you went from having a really good job to doing your own thing, and those peaks and those valleys make you question what you're doing, right? And you have to be 100% committed. You know, you have to be 100% committed. There was, when I moved to Omaha, I was so burned out because I was doing short sales, which were so hard at the time. And I got a job, and I thought, I just want a paycheck and, like, specific hours. I don't want to deal with it. I literally had met Mike like 2 days before, and he's like, you are going to be terrible at this. You should not have a job. You're going to hate it. I worked for a day and a half, and I was like, I can't do this. I even told him, it was a big corporation. I said, don't pay me. They're like, no, it's actually easier if we do pay you for that day and a half. So I got paid for it. And I would never try to go back to something else now. You know, we'll figure it out, because even though it's a struggle, and, like, having a job might feel like security, it's for yourself. You know, you're doing your own, like, you get to make the decisions of what you do and how hard you work. And sometimes, you know, it feels like 3 full-time jobs in a normal 40-hour week. And then other times it doesn't. Like, now, honestly, like, even though we don't have a super huge amount in the bank right now, I'm basically semi-retired, because we set our companies up to be able to run without us, which allows us to be gone and is allowing me to be able to now create this coaching program that I want to do. And I could have never done it any other way, because, like I said in the beginning, I wasn't a specialist, wasn't going to be a specialist. So I learned sales, and I learned how to build businesses. And now my life is able to be different from most people's lives.
I remember my first year of being a DBG, and having a J-O-B.
And when
a lot of acronyms here.
Is this making you go back to it? Well, sitting across the desk from me.
Yeah. We sat same desk for a year.
We did. We couldn't afford another desk.
Okay, hang on. I don't know that everybody understands the dynamic here. Like,
okay,
could you guys maybe dive into that for a second? Like, what are you guys talking about with DBG? Okay. So, like, we're in Omaha, Nebraska.
Yes.
Ted is a licensed broker, and Jerry was the OG broker with all this relationship. So maybe,
well, she technically still is, because she's the Iowa broker.
I'm the Iowa broker. So I had a real estate team in Arizona, a team at another brokerage called DVG Realty, and a real estate group. And then when I moved to Omaha, and I already had,
what
my
does DVG stand for?
It's Dream Vesting Group.
Ah, okay.
And so Dream Vesting was like our tagline, investing in your home ownership dreams. And then when the market crashed, I just shortened it up, because home ownership in Arizona was a nightmare. And I didn't want to remind people of that. When I moved to Omaha, you know, I came because I was doing short sales and I was teaching brokerages and stuff how to do it. And I got courted by other brokerages, but I already had my broker's license. So I just did DVG Realty and did it on my own. And then my husband and Ted have known each other since college.
No, Omaha Nightlife, like so 2001, maybe 2002. Okay.
So shortly after college, they've been good friends, mm-hmm. in each other's weddings and so forth. And so,
well, he's been in my wedding. I've never been.
We weren't both. He, okay. Okay. Both he and I had been in so many weddings, and we decided not to have people stand up with us because it would have been like a lot of people we would have wanted to have. You would have been at the front. But we had our friends. We actually got married in like a circle so that our friends were all around us and we could see all of them while we were saying our vows. It was very cool.
With the Husker game playing in the background.
Oh, that started out right after. We had to time it for that.
Real quick, I'm going to interject. I feel like as a society, we should embrace having people 10 years after the fact stand up and announce who now would be their wedding party.
That's
like, wouldn't
true.
That be good? Like a That's renewal true. Of a wedding party.
I'm definitely not in communication with everybody whose weddings I was.
Because mine would be totally different now.
Well, Ted would still be there.
Yeah, I pretty much still have a text blast and everything with a lot of people that are that were in my wedding.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean,
Like we keep in touch.
What I was hoping for here was like I would be in your wedding party. And I thought that's where I was going with all this. I just wanted to redo our wedding group,
but it might be a little different.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. A little different meaning I would be in it.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thank you. Yes, I accept.
I would live stream it.
So we'll renew the vows next year, Jessica. This is happening.
I love it. You know, I'm ordained, so I can do that for you.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
So. I've actually officiated 6 weddings now.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's a first.
And I always get asked by a guest who doesn't know me. And then I'm like, I'm just a friend. And they're like, oh, sorry.
Don't worry. I've been the best man at a wedding that I didn't know that I was just kind of brought in. So.
They tagged you in. Were you like wedding crasher? You're like, oh,
I was. My cousin was getting married, and her husband, or now ex-husband, was from somewhere else, and he knew nobody here.
Oh,
so I came in as the best man through a best man party and everything.
Was he
like
Jamaican?
That. Oh, that's nice. And I brought in all my buddies for the party. You know, and he knew nobody. You know, but we just threw it. And I tell you now, because it's been a long time, I couldn't remember his name.
Ted, but you had a good time, right?
We had a great time. Yeah. I was there for my cousin, which you know, so she was a bride. But anyway, so DBG and JOB.
Yes. I knew Ted, and I knew what a great salesman he was, and I said, "I would like. We need you. What can we do to get you to come work with us?"
But when I came over to that JOB, which was bringing us back to earlier, it was one of the first times in 10, 12 years. That I actually went home unstressed. So, you know, that there was benefits to that JOB because I didn't have all the stuff at the end of the day to worry about, you know, when it comes to owning your own business. Mm-hmm. I had a paycheck coming in. I didn't need to worry about going through my mountains of emails till 2 a.m. like I did last night. And I didn't have to worry about working on imbalancing all my QuickBook accounts, which I was doing last night. You know what I mean? And the day before, I was creating marketing reels. I mean, I didn't have to worry about that. You know, it was nice not having to stress about that. So there is some nice things about a JOB because you can actually focus on your family a little bit more.
There is, for sure. There's definitely, with being self-employed, there's a hustle period, a big hustle period. And your next steps are just leverage.
I agree. I'm just telling you that jobs suck and working for people generally sucks, and not being able to have your freedom throughout the day sucks. I didn't have those issues when I transferred and worked for you, but a lot of places I worked before had those issues. But to not have that night, that daily stress, there's a value to that.
Before we go on, I'm just going to clarify for the real estate commission that Ted. Ted is the owner and broker of DVG Realty in Nebraska, and I am the owner and broker of DVG Realty in Iowa.
Because we got a letter on that.
We did. And so we have that delineation, though, but that is how Ted and I you know, have been working together for the past 8 years now, eight and a half. And I'm really grateful. Again, going back to that.
Everything I've learned has been specifically because of you and sitting across the table. I knew nothing about this industry going into it.
But now you know more than me, so, and I appreciate
I
that.
I don't agree with that statement at all.
I might have more experience in the investing side, but you're definitely crushing it.
Well, you probably have 1,000 hours of RIA radio recordings to reflect on from interviewing people.
That's like my counseling.
And that's probably not an exaggeration.
This is like my counseling.
10,000 hours makes an expert. So
we do not have 10,000
10 more years, baby.
Yeah, but
we'll be there.
But I have it in all the different areas.
I would say that we, between RIA, our local RIA group, this a solid 320 hours.
Yeah.
Of interviews and recordings.
And with your real estate, you're at 10,000 hours. Just own it.
Yep, 10,000. There we go.
Own it, bro. Own it.
That's a lot of hours.
Yeah. And owning your own business, you know, it's rough because you're the bottom line. And so there's times when, you know, multiple times when everybody else gets their paycheck and we didn't get anything, you know. But in the end, that's why the like equity buildup, it's kind of the same thing with real estate. Like they want to, you know, people who aren't real estate investors think real estate investors are so evil and greedy. But the truth is, you're the bottom line. If the tenant doesn't pay the mortgage, you pay it. You know, if something needs fixed, you pay it. If the house burns down and insurance won't cover it, you have to pay it.
A la like, COVID.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened with COVID.
Yeah.
So all the responsibility, and it became crystal clear at that moment who the buck stopped with.
Yeah.
Because the government said evictions are over and foreclosures are done. But the eviction part, like that affected far more people than I think the foreclosure moratorium affected.
Yeah.
Because then basically the government said, hey, landlords, good job, you know, furthering your family and all the hard work you're doing. You're now on the hook for everybody's rent payments to pay your mortgage. Yep. You're paying your own mortgage regardless of whether or not you have tenants that are paying you income.
Yeah. And.
So that's missed on everything else because landlords are greedy and landlords are this and that. And then it's like, guess what? I'm a small business owner.
Yeah.
Like I have a family to provide for. So do you. Right.
And same with any business. The boss is greedy and the boss makes all the money, but everybody else does all the work.
Nobody else wants the risk.
They have no idea, you know, and it's really hard. And then there's the moments where you look at your balance sheet and you're like, wow, I could probably sell this and this is what it was for. Going back to values though, you have to, everyone should balance out because of my anxieties and all this, you know, the craziness that I came with. I was a workaholic for many, many years and COVID helped with that. We had a really terrible year in 2020, not even counting COVID, just so many things happened. You know, we had to, managers of two of our companies passed away, different reasons. We had a key employee that
left. Like general managers, not like...
Yeah,
not
like, just, like they ran the company. Another one of another company, we had to let go and took half the business and half the, you know, half the employees. And we had to rebuild that to the tune of about 20 grand loss every month for 18 months, you know. And it's hard, but those things also made me sit back and go, okay, no matter how hard I work, I couldn't have predicted or stopped or influenced what's happening with COVID. And so what are my values? You know, family, God, health. I'm still working on the health area, but you know, our employees, we didn't let anyone go. You know, we got assistance, but we didn't let anybody go just because we didn't. There, if they got let go, it was a different reason, you know, a normal everyday business reason. But I had to really sit back and take a look at, why am I working so hard? What is the actual point? You know, because I can burn myself out doing this job that goes nowhere and then like one day wish that I would have spent more time with my family, or I can live my life differently. And so ever since then, that's really been what we've, you know, been working on doing every day is like, is this really what we want to do? And why are we doing this? And just really taking a look at the big picture.
I want to bring up something. So I was like, you guys are Alex Hormozi followers, yeah? Mm-hmm. Jerry, I don't know about you. Mm-hmm. No, not so much. So Alex Hormozi, a lot of real estate investors like Alex because he's kind of a burn the boats, work your ass off, build a business, like no excuses type of a guy. And he 10X'd a lot of stuff that he believes in. But he's also a nihilist, meaning he like thinks that when you're done with life, you just blink out and you're done. Right. Yeah. So kind of I don't know what I still am trying to figure out why he's doing what he's doing.
So he's trying to build a legacy so he'll be remembered after he dies, because that'll be it.
Well, but he also goes on record saying that like nobody's going to remember you. And if you build a legacy and you have a park built after you, nobody's going to know your name like 100 years after that. So what's the point? Basically, he's like a what's the point type of guy, but he's like, I have this burning desire to be, I want to be more and more and more. So that's hard because I also have that, and it's hard to reconcile the need to be like accepted and also satisfy your need to grow. But
I tell you what, that thought has always been in my head because I'm always like, what's going to be left to remember me? And I think about the buildings that are getting built right now, and then and they're being replaced in the buildings that were tore down that had somebody's name on them. Or you go to the zoo and there's an exhibit and somebody spent $10, $20 million on this exhibit, and that exhibit's not going to be there forever. And I've always kind of like, I'm like, I want to leave something, but that's permanent. And so how do you leave something that's permanent where your namesake, not necessarily Ted, but my Kosh name could be taken on and the family could be proud of that. I mean, and I was actually thinking deep on this because I was at a local park, Platte River State Park, and it's like my Zen place to go to. I go there all the time, go camping. Mm-hmm. And there's all these benches with names on them in memory of. And I'm like, God, I really love that, you know?
In memory of Ted Kosh.
I love that too. However, the truth is nothing is permanent. Nothing is permanent. None of those buildings or benches are going to be there in 1,000 years. So nothing is permanent.
Even the pyramids are starting to fall
apart.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people whose names you do remember from that long ago, like none of us are those people, right? So nothing is permanent. And I, you know me, I like esoteric stuff and quantum physics and all that. I geek out on that stuff. And I actually think about this, and I actually one day want to ask the creator what's the actual point of it all? You know, like, I don't believe that you end after you die. I think you go on forever. But like, what's the point of this? Like, mm-hmm. We're going through a lot of stuff being here, and you know, most people will say the point is love, and my legacy, and I think all of ours is our children. And then how do they do it? How do they do life next? And how do they teach their children? And everything is constantly growing and evolving. And what does this place look like in 1,000 years? Are we leaving a legacy of war and hatred and separation, or are we leaving a legacy that is leading towards, you know, like the Garden of Eden type of thing? Mm. I think that's all we got.
That's so deep.
Yeah, I was looking at you. I don't know how to follow that up, but I think when you start getting older, you start evaluating what your sense of purpose is. Mm. And does it match up with what your 20 years ago or 10 years ago, same, you know, yourself 10 years ago or 20 years ago, what did they think? What's my sense of purpose? And I think over time that changes. And then the older you get, the more you want to give back. And the older you get, like, the more you want to have a lasting legacy. But to your point, it's like, you know, even the pyramids are falling apart, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Thousands and thousands of years ago. And so if I have a park named after me, who gives a shit? Nobody. Nobody cares.
A couple generations
ago. I was thinking about this the other day, actually. So I was driving around Carter Lake. I live in a small town. It's probably like 4,000, residents. and everybody has a golf cart in that community, and I'm trying to teach my daughter how to drive. So we started with a golf cart, and we're driving around, and I'm looking at these parks, and there's several, you know, like decent, you know, playgrounds for kids and so on. And it's like Rosenbaugh Park and like Mabry Park and like all these parks. And I'm like, I have no idea who these people are, no idea who they are. And just because their name is on it doesn't mean I know anything about them. And that's sad, honestly. And it, but at the same time, life goes on. Like,
yeah.
You know, they lived prior to me, and they passed on their legacy by giving back to the community, and that's great. And I guess eventually you have to get to the point where that's okay. Like, yeah. you give it to the next generation, and beyond the next generation, it's probably lost. Or at least your legacy is lost. But as long as they can get the spirit of it and carry it on, then I suppose that's what it's all about. But it's hard, man. It's hard thinking about your own legacy. And like when you get to a point where you can actually start making an impact, you have to really choose carefully.
Yes. Yes. I think it's also important. One thing you said is as you get older, you start thinking more and more about what are your values. And I think it's so important for people to not only think about what are their values, but really take a hard look at how their life is. And does their life, what they spend time on in their life, reflect what they say is their values? I'm totally blanking on the guy's name, but there's a whole school of thought and training where a guy says your values are what you spend time on every day. So don't BS yourself that it's God, family, work. You know, like really, if you're spending 12 hours a day on work and you see your family for 30 minutes, your work is number one. And it can change. Those can always change. However, that's the truth. And I think a lot of people are happy to say, my values are God, family, life. And that's not really how our society in general lives their life.
It's true. I mean, I'd like to say that too. But I mean, if I think deep on it, those aren't necessarily the things I put the most time in. My family is up there in the top three for sure, as far as what I truly put my time into.
Let me ask you guys something. I'm gonna introduce a little levity into this conversation here. So since we've been all serious about life and goals and whatever, guilty pleasures. If I had to start with you, Denlis.
Why me first?
Because you're right there. You look like you wanted to be picked on. What's a guilty pleasure you have? And everything is okay. Like tomorrow's not listening to this. Just pretend.
She's not listening.
No, she really isn't listening.
Neither is my wife. We're good. We're good, bro.
Jessica only listens to the intros.
Okay. So guilty pleasure.
You could be like, I'm pounding bourbon and doing coke in the back room, and then she's not listening. He's going to edit this out for sure.
So No. I'll keep it in. So you're talking about like vices, right?
No, not at all. No, like what do you spend your spare time on? Like if you have... You're non-work related. You have a window of opportunity where there's no family, no work obligations. What's your interest?
I am very boring.
Okay.
And all I would do is sit and play video games.
What's your jam? Call of Duty? Really?
I nailed it. Driving games and
Grand Theft Auto?
Yeah, that too. Need for Speed.
You're a terrible person.
I know, right? Need for Speed and
I love Call of Duty, but I haven't played it for years. But I do love it.
Yeah, I play with my brother. Like when my wife works, because she works nights. So when she's home, I spend time with her. But when she works, I spend time with my brother.
So you're a gamer.
Yeah, I am a gamer through and through.
Denlis Bertrand, gamer.
My gamer name is Honey, I'm Home. But it's spelled Hun, H-O-N, knee as in the knee of your body, arm, and home.
Got it. That's Jerry?
Well, my guilty pleasure is TikTok.
Oh.
I can't remember the last time I watched TV, but if I have a few minutes, I scroll TikTok. But again, my TikTok is like happy stuff. So I kind of like it. And then what I do in my spare time when I don't have the kids and stuff around, I don't feel guilty about is, this is where I'm a weirdo, is I love meditation and breath work and yoga And my kids know that if I'm really crabby for more than one day, that I need a girls' trip, which is a mom's trip without the kids.
Perfect.
So,
Tedder?
Yeah, I'm really big on like boys' nights. So we get some of the old school boys together from, you know, high school and middle school and from our early 20s, and we do a game of Risk. And we'll smoke some cigars, we'll hang out in the garage, put some Sunday night football on, and that's just one of our things. I love just binging on some shows, which I don't get a lot of time to do.
You got any favorites right now?
I just finished Suits yesterday.
Oh God, that was good. Such a good series.
And I really like The Boys. And there's the spinoff.
Yeah, did you see the spinoff?
The V.
I'm all caught up.
Yeah, yeah. I got caught up on that one too.
Yeah, that's good.
It's really raunchy, but it's really good.
That's my weekend. I'm a loser. I'm gonna watch this. Whatever.
Jessica was hanging out for me for like 2 seconds last night, and they did the intro and the guy's penis explodes, and she's like, "What are you watching?"
See, now that's the stuff I was talking about.
I don't know why
about.
You mentioned
you
that.
But it's in
the credits. And I'm like, and she's like, what are you watching? I'm like, you know that boy show? And then I'm really into cars. So I like to, if I'm totally caught up on, have nothing to work on, I love going out to the garage. I have a TV, I have a heated garage. I'll put a show or football on TV. And I'll go out there and I'll detail the car, or I'll buff it, or get something, work on something on the car. If I could just work on a stereo system or put something in the car and had no other
responsibilities,
I would just. That's why I like. I always tell Jessica, I go, it's good for me to have a toy car in the garage, just to have something to do and take my sanity. Mm.
I was big into boys' nights and stuff when I was back home. But I don't have much boys now, so, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ted will invite you.
You like one place from Risk?
No. No, thank you.
Risk night is the best night. Like when I'm really feeling like lonely and needing my people, I we'll do a Risk night, and it's like it, that's my therapy.
It's cathartic for Ted. Okay.
Yeah. Yo.
What's yours, Owen?
I don't have one.
No.
So you just said BS. Some TV shows.
Don't we not go there? No, I like for me, I think my guilty pleasure is golf. I love doing that, and I've just
not scrambles with your friends.
I've gotten busier over the last couple of years, so I haven't been able to play it as much as I would like, which everybody can complain about that, but so like
one or two times a week versus like 3 to 4 times a week, or what?
I have a league night on Tuesdays, and I usually try to play on Sunday. So yeah, 2 times a week. Yeah. I don't know why you're throwing shade at me.
Well, I'm just saying that's a little amount for you, right? Because you ideally you'd be at 3 to 4.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I was getting
at. For sure. Yeah. Like if I had no work obligations, or like, you know, like the family thing was taken care of, like, yeah, I would play 3 or 4 times a week for sure.
Probably would play every day. If you get
no, I don't think so. I thought about that a lot. I don't think I could golf 7 days a week. No.
Mm. Well, with all that great insight that Owen just got into with us, I think it's time to get into today's
Failing Forward.
This week's Failing Forward is brought to you by JM Real Estate Capital.
Hi, it's Rob, JM Real Estate Capital. We're the money guys that you need to know for all your real estate investments. Talk to us. We can do what your local bank can't or won't do. We don't have millions. We have trillions with a T to lend. 844-WE-CLOSE or go online, jmrecapital.com. That's jmrecapital.com. JM Real Estate Capital, smart solutions for the real estate investor.
Did you know we had such great voices there?
Really? That's awesome.
Harmonized.
I like it.
That's the first time you've heard it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We can do it again for you if you like.
Sure.
Right. 1, 2, 3.
Failing Forward.
Wow, Ted got strong on that one.
Jerry's like cracking up.
So,
I love it.
Jerry, you've shared some heartfelt experiences up until this point, but we hope you have something left in the tank here to give us for our section that we lovingly call Failing Forward, where we explore.
For the third time.
Something that didn't go according to plan.
Well, I unfortunately feel like my whole life has not went according to plan. I think that was what most of this podcast was about. However, I have more. So I'm going to give you a little bit different one than a real estate specific example. One of my failing forwards in the last few years has been in hiring employees.
Difficult thing.
It is difficult. And when you're, for Mike and I, as a small business, you know, there was times where we're like, we'll figure out how to pay you. And when it's that, you know, when it's like that, it's like, why does anybody want to work for us? Like, that was kind of my mentality for a long time. And so, like, if somebody offered them, you know, offered to do the job, I would hire them. And I wasn't super selective for a long time. And that got us into a lot of trouble. And we had, I told you, you know, we had an experience in 2020 that was a big, you know, we lost three key employees, and one of them, you know, we had to part ways with. And that, we both really reflected on that time. Like, there was, not in the very beginning, but there was a time where I had a gut instinct and I should have relied on my gut instinct more. And so I feel like since that time, we have made much better hires in our business. And therefore, because they're trustworthy, you know, they're team players, they really embody all of our core values as a company now, you know, we are able to expand ourselves and even, you know, not just physical location wise, but like in the bigger projects that Mike's doing, because we have better people.
I've only hired VAs for the most part, you know, for my businesses. And I struggle with the amount of effort it takes to train a VA. And I know I had my very first VA I ever took on a couple of years ago, just decimated my email system, you know, and it was detrimental financially and so on. So I had to move on from that. And then, you know, I tried it again, and this person I spent a ton of time training and actually got really good. But a portion of the job was to make phone calls. And the person's like, that wasn't part of the job description. I'm not going to do that. But that part of the job was really important. You got to make phone calls. And so ultimately I had to make a decision like, hey, you know what? This person's doing amazing and all this, but is refusing to do part of the work. And I was like, do I cut my ties now? And I did. Now I'm going through the whole training process again. And then now we have a team of people helping us out. And one of those people fell deathly ill and might not live through the year. And now that person has access to all my video shorts and a whole bunch of other stuff that we can't get access to, because that person's like in a coma or something, and we can't access any of the work that's been done over in our marketing department. And I feel like I keep on struggling in investing a ton of money into making the right decisions, but I keep on failing at this also. Yeah. And
it's hard.
I know your situation is a lot different.
Well, I've been there though. Yeah. It's especially hard when you're hiring your first people, because you have to train them to do all the things. And so you don't hire someone until you are too busy. And so then you have to take more time to train somebody. Mm-hmm. It's very hard. It's really difficult. Once you get to where you can have a manager in place that has been with you, that you can trust, it's much easier. They set up systems. If something happens to that person, someone else can easily come in. But with VAs, I've been there with you through all of these. Mm-hmm. And now with the company that we're with, I really am happy with them because they train the people and I don't have to take the time to train it. No one else from our staff really has to take the time to train. And for the most part, they had everything on the cloud to back up. So I'm surprised that you're not able to get access to something.
Well, there's a lot of things that are changing because of these moves, but I'm not bashing on the company. I'm just saying it's just difficult, you know, that you put all this effort into certain people and then ultimately, you're starting over.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like you had an assistant, and you kind of dealt with that also. Right?
Yeah, it's challenging to offload things because, like you said, Jerry, you spend so much time with training someone and getting them up to speed on how you like to do things. And then if they don't work out, then it's like all that training time is lost. Mm-hmm. And I look at, you know, this is anecdotal here, but I look back on my 3 or 4 months that I had an assistant, and she helped me a lot. Like, she set up a lot of stuff differently than maybe I already had, and improved some processes, got some stuff in place that I didn't. So I look at it as a win. And I know now that I could do things differently with the next one I hire. So I think it's this is just me personally. I dealt with a lot of stuff on my own for a long time, and probably arguably, not even arguably, like I dealt with a lot of stuff on my own for years and years and years that I probably should have hired out. And when I got to the point where I was hiring it out, I wasn't really probably prepared to set them up for success. So I struggled with that. But now that I have some, you know, like separation from the whole event, I know now what I would do differently, or at least some things I would, to make it better for them and me. And yeah, I think it's just one of those things where I think a lot of people get into the entrepreneur mindset where you do everything on your own and you're wearing a ton of hats and it's blocking and tackling every day and you're fielding challenges and problems. And then you hire somebody and you're like, I want them to perform exactly like I would. And that's not realistic.
No. So my metric is, if somebody can do it 70% of what I would do it, that's good enough, because I can train the next 30, or I can find somebody to fill that gap. And now, having been through everything I've been through over the last, you know, 13 years, really, I agree with you. Like, you do everything and before you bring someone else in, and I encourage people to look at what they're doing earlier. And like, if you weren't doing your books, what else could you do that would free up time for you to do something that you're really good at, that you enjoy, and that it can be income producing? Or Ted needs to sleep more. that's true. And some of it is self-care. Sometimes it's self-care. But if there's things that you don't like to do and you're not good at it, you shouldn't do any of those things. Those should all be outsourced. And another way to look at it is, what is your time worth? And so, how much money did you make last year? Divide that by hourly. And I'm pretty sure you'll be surprised at how high the number is. You know, because for a long time, someone asked me that 5 years ago, and I was like, I don't know, $50 an hour. And he was like, bullshit. And so we calculated, not my whole year, but what is your highest and best thing that you love to do that is the most income generating? And my hourly was like $13,000 an hour, you know, based off, if I only did that, that's how, you know, and did it all the time, which wasn't possible to do that one thing all the time. But,
yeah,
you know, you get the idea. And so if it's you can find a bookkeeper, you know, you hopefully somebody you can trust, because that's a hard thing. And you can find people that can set up appointments, mow your lawn, like do your laundry, like whatever it is, you know, let them do it, and then go do something that's offering more value to the world that you're really good at and you love.
Yeah, it's, well, I'm going to say one thing, and I'm going to ask you, actually, I'm going to return the serve to you. What, any advice you could give to people that maybe don't, okay, so there's one thing where you say, this isn't the highest and best use of my time. So like, you realize that you're cutting grass, or you're doing laundry, or you're doing stuff around the house, or whatever, that's, or bookkeeping, right? Or stuff in your business that's like not super useful for you, or it's like maybe a lower value job where you could outsource it. How do you get, let's say this, and pretend for a moment you're not married to Mike. Mm-hmm. Okay, because I assume he's going to be on board with you if this is the decision you need to make. But like, let's say you're wanting to hire somebody for a job like meal prep, or doing your laundry, or running errands, or stuff that's going to free up your time to do other things, or maybe not do other things. Maybe it's just freeing up your time in general so you can live. How do you get a spouse or a significant other on board with you not doing something that they're like, okay, sorry, you're too big of a deal to do that now. Is this you guys know what I mean by this? Yeah.
So
there's got to be a transition point where it's like accepted and where it's not, like, because yeah. I haven't hit it yet.
So I think usually the person who doesn't want to outsource something has a fear behind it. So what's the fear? Is it that you can't afford it, or, you know, it's taking away from something? And so really ask them that. And then usually the fear is unfounded. And so have a conversation about that. You know, like for Mike and I, what I love teaching our kids. I actually love it. However, bouncing between focusing on the children and focusing on work makes me really stressed out. I feel really pulled thin, and then I'm not nice to anybody. You know, then I'm telling Ted I hate this, and then I'm yelling at the kids and all that. And so I said, I'm going to hire a tutor. And he was like, you know, like, and can really, we afford it? Yeah. And I explained that to him, and he said, yeah, and that made more sense to him, you know. And then also, because our finances have been tight for the last 6 months, you know, I said, if I have these free hours, then it frees me up to work on this coaching program that I'm really excited about. And I feel like it will be worth it. And so we tried it out. We had one day with her, and I was like a completely different person. I felt like, la, life, you know, like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. And he saw that. And so then he was like, whatever you need to do, you know? And so I think, like, really having that conversation, like, if it's meal prepping, why do you want somebody to meal prep? Do you want healthier food? Do you not enjoy it? And also, usually, I think people are pleasantly surprised that those things cost less than what they thought it would cost. You know, like, I had my big house north of Council Bluffs clean for like $100 a time. And you would think it would be like $500. But yeah. if they were just like tidying up the main floor, it was like $100, you know? And so why would I spend my whole Saturday cleaning the house? I hate cleaning. My kids are just going behind me and messing it up. You know, it's a whole Saturday where we could be doing something else as a family, totally. Or towards yeah. our businesses. And so I just encourage you to, like, dig deeper on that with the person.
Well, I think there's, like, mom guilt that is a big part of it. And if you have, you know, if you're a man in this business, not to stereotype, but, like, I'm speaking from my experience, like, my wife is used to being a high performer in her job. And she has, you know, now that she's retired, she has high standards. I'm going to put it that way, like, around her house. So she's like, you know, she's taken the void and time that used to be occupied by her job, and now she's applied it to our household. And so I have a hard time a lot of times talking with her about this, because I'm like, you know, I love her to death, but she'll drive 30 minutes and 30 minutes back, or 20 minutes and 20 minutes back, to save 50 cents on gas.
Mike used to do that.
You know what I'm saying? Like, she'll drive to Sam's Club in Council Bluffs just to fill up. And I'm like, you do realize this cost you like 3 gallons of gas to go there.
Yeah.
And then so that doesn't go over well. Like, it's like the mom guilt and or the dad guilt. I mean, there's, that's a thing too. It's like, you feel like you're being lazy, or you know what I mean? Like, you're being lazy. That's the fear. And it's like the perception of being lazy outweighs the fact that you're actually making way more money as a result of it.
That's a Midwest thing, I think. However, also in that situation, your wife might not have ever looked in a really long time at what she truly wants out of life, because she was working and her time has always been filled. And so now she's just filling it again.
Yeah. And nature hates a vacuum.
Yeah. And so maybe it would be really beneficial for her to come to my ladies retreat in January in Phoenix.
Oh, shameless.
but really to, like, look at, like, who am I without, because retirement is a huge transition where people have to look and say, who am I? What do I really want? And maybe there's something that she forgot that she loves or never even realized that she loves, that she wants to focus some time on, and finding somebody to do meal prep to her standards, she can go do that thing. And you don't have to hire the first person, you know, find the person that matches the standards and use it. I wasn't good at this either, but I've learned over time, treat your house like a business, you know, treat your household like a business. And so if you're hiring somebody to come in and clean, interview them. Like, I am interviewing you on this cleaning. That doesn't mean you're coming back, you know. Same thing with food or any of the things.
Well, Jerry, we're definitely getting to the end of it here, but there is one question I know that you're going to have a few different answers to go to, and you're going to probably go through your book to think about this one, but do you have any crazy, weird, or wild investment stories to tell?
Enough that we talk about writing a book all the time at the office. You were with me on the one that comes to mind. It was a...
Oh, the apartment complex.
Yes.
Yes.
An apartment complex in Omaha, and you and I were walking it with the property manager, who is a smaller man than me, and you know, he was doing a great job.
Was that Mr. Cools?
Yes. He was showing us the building. Name. You know, and then we went down in the basement because there was a laundry room and storage in the basement, and we're down there, we're looking around for a while, and all of a sudden one of the storage room doors opens, and it's like plywood storage. Mm-hmm. That's how they created this, you know, not a very fancy apartment building we were looking at. This door creaks open, and out walks this guy who was probably like 6'5", white guy with dreadlocks. And he literally just walked past us, and this little man, property manager, chased him out down the street. And Ted and I were like, what just happened?
White Samson appeared.
Oh, my God. So the property manager comes back. He has chased him off at this point. And we look in the storage unit. And this guy was using a bucket to go to the bathroom. And he had a Bunsen burner. And we look around. There's literally a dead snake, like, coiled around this electrical line or something. He had like some playing cards, like someone had hung out down there with him, and we don't know how long he was living there. The property manager seemed to be very familiar with the property, though. While we are,
he's like, oh yeah, that's just Terry. No mind.
No.
He's harmless. He was, just tarot cards and dead snakes.
So then the guy comes back, and he chased him off again, and he had called the police, and they showed up about that time, but. That was, I'll never forget that. That was we flipped a lot of houses. People used to laugh because I'd show up, you know, in my skirt and high heels to walk through these like really bad properties. And I never was scared. And then this time I was like, whoa, I need the taser or something.
I remember my first year, I'd wear a 3-piece suit every day. and I'd be going to these North Omaha houses, and then the neighbors become like, you cannot be showing up around here like this.
Yeah.
Like, they became like, you're standing out too much. People are looking. You cannot come here looking like this. Yeah. But I always wore a 3-piece suit, and I had my big tie.
And we would always make friends. There's always, in that area, there's always an old man sitting on the porch, like watching the neighborhood, and we'd make friends with him, and he'd look out for us wherever we were.
That story always reminds me of the time I was helping Chris and Colin find multifamilies back in the day, and we walked one property, and the property just got filled with a whole bunch of people from another country, and they just weren't really accustomed to the American way of doing things. And they had perfectly good working bathrooms and everything, but in the laundry room,
I've heard about this a lot.
Yeah, in the bathroom or in the laundry room, there was a lady taking a shower with a bucket.
Oh,
I think you mean the utility room.
Utility room, yeah.
Not the laundry room.
Well, I thought there was laundry in there.
Well, yeah, laundry / utility. Yeah,
just the basement.
Yeah. Colin tells me, I walk in and there's like these all these like pygmy kids, and they're like like washing themselves in a 5-gallon bucket, and I'm just like, what?
Well, he said that when this happened, he's like, well, this isn't the first time this has happened.
How many have we had where people were cooking in the bathtubs too, and we had to call the, you know, whatever organization help put them, and they can't necessarily teach them unless they're asked. But we're like, but cooking in a bathtub's a really bad idea. Like that, it's got paint and stuff, you know, like we're yeah. worried about them, you know, like I don't think they can burn down the bathtub, but there's paint and fumes, and like somebody's got to teach people that that's not okay.
Mm. I remember your property manager, Austin, getting into a little bit about that and how it completely ruined a unit, and they had a bonfire pretty much in the bathtub, and
yeah,
and they're from they came in from Afghanistan, and they're in one of the Airbnbs.
That's hard.
Well, Jerry, we're definitely getting to the end of the podcast here, and I think it's time to get into our favorite section.
We're almost out of time. Let's get into the OT with Owen and Ted.
In this section, Jerry, we cover the same questions with every guest. And the first one for you is, what is your first book going to be titled or about?
Well, I was actually a co-author of a Amazon number one international best-selling book called Brave Women Stand. So it was
I did learn something today.
It's a conglomeration of female authors who each wrote a chapter. And it's very advertised towards women, but it's just a good book on success and failing forward.
When was this?
Last summer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it came out about a year ago.
Is this on Audible?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
It'd be a lot cooler if it was.
I know. Maybe one day. But I'm actually going to be starting to write another book. It's going to be more geared towards real estate specifically, and have to do with our Dream Vesting brand. So it'll be called something like that. But like in real life, it should probably be called Failing Forward. Or you know, I heard about
you pay us some royalties.
Yeah, we want credits on that. Yeah.
I think we got that from our team meeting, though. Remember?
No.
We used to do that. Right. Thanks.
Well done.
But we also, I heard recently about this boat trip you can do called the Big Loop, where they go from the Great Lakes down the Mississippi River around Florida, back up around Maine and back through the Great Lakes. And it's called the Great Loop. And I was like, maybe my book should be called the Great Loop, because so many things like loop back, like where I thought it was the worst thing in the world, like goes full circle and turns out to be the greatest thing, like so many of the things I talked about today.
You got about 6 weeks to go ahead and brand that name, and then go ahead and buy the website address. So that,
and then Ted's all over it.
And then he's stealing it.
Somebody listening will grab it. Well, one question we have is, if you could interview anyone in the world today, who would it be, and what question would you ask?
So I told you earlier that my interests are quantum physics and things like that. I want to know what the hell about the whole world and why it was created and what's the point. And so I think of people like Gandhi or Tony Robbins would be fun to ask some questions to.
He knows the reason for life.
I don't think he knows the reasons for life, but he knows a lot of reasons that I think I could ask him a lot of questions.
So I'm reading this book right now. Part of the story is quantum entanglement, and it's basically time travel related. So if you transport yourself back, there's like a paradox where if you go back and change the past, it means you're going to erase the current state. And this one talks about sending really, really bad people into the past, like into the Triassic period. But it's sending them into an alternate timeline. So it's not affecting anything that you have currently going on. But it's like death sentence. You're just handing it out, right? But then the story goes where the original creator of this whole apparatus that is the time machine is actually one that gets accused of murder. And they send him back into the Triassic period. And then his daughter is left behind in the current timeline trying to desperately reassemble a way to bring him back, and then like it's a whole mess of timelines or whatever. But I'm really into that.
It's really interesting once you start going down the rabbit hole. Like
Yeah.
I never.
The causality versus, you know, like there's all this, you know, math involved with it.
If you even think about what it took for you to be born from the parents you were born from, like all the thousands of generations of people that had to come together. And in order for them to come together, all the decisions in their lives that had to happen or the things that they went through, it's...
I literally, when you were talking about like the whole thing about while you're an adult and how your mindset changes, I was thinking about, just imagine how many different mindset shifts you would have had from the time you could remember about thinking about dreaming of what you wanted to be till the age that you are right now. It's insane how many different things and different personalities that you adopted and had to change and pivot every single time you experience something in life. It's
and most of them are accidental, you know. Yeah. Very few are conscious and on purpose.
Yeah, and it's because of, as you say, well, accidental, but also it's as a result of something that happened in your life too.
So, yeah.
Sorry, it just made me start thinking about that.
Deep thoughts by Demlis. Yeah. That's our new section.
I love it.
Okay, very sad time in your, you know, once was your life. You are now dead. Who is going to give your eulogy, and what do you hope they're going to say about you?
Well, probably my son Caleb will give it because he likes to be the center of attention and talk. he's definitely going to be a speaker somehow one day. And I hope that they just say that I was a loving person who not only loved him and his sisters, but everybody else as well.
You love them a shitload.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'm very clear that my kids are going to need a little healing from their childhood. However, you know, we didn't get into this, but one thing that I think Mike and I are really good at is loving people. And like, we have really open adoptions with our kids' birth parents. And, you know, I just want to be known for like, I have no right to judge anybody based on my past or who I am. And I just hope that I live life in a way that other people can see that and feel loved and accepted.
I know that mentorship is a big part of what you do, but what mentors have affected your life? Like, what if you could pinpoint one person that has had the biggest impact to you on your personal growth and your business growth, who would it be?
Oh my gosh. I've had so many. I try to always have mentors, and I'm going to miss somebody I know. So this probably isn't the person who's had the most impact over my entire life. However, I have somebody who had a lot of impact through this recent transition. And her name is Debbie and her husband Juan. And they are people that we know from a life success course that we are part of. And they're kind of like aunts and uncles to us. And they just really have loved on us and taken us under their wing. And they're always doing a lot of training, and they coach other people as well. And they have done some training and coaching with me recently that has really helped me level up and really helped me like really see what is the truth and not just what is the story my mind is replaying over and over again at the time. And so I'm really grateful for them right now at the moment. And I'm sorry for all the people I'm forgetting, because there's been a lot that I could think about and thank.
Well, we all know it's been a big part of your growth.
Mm-hmm.
Are you pointing at me?
Mm-hmm.
It's my turn?
Yeah, it's your turn.
Okay, Jerry, so when you were a little blonde running around, you were always a blonde? I just wanted to know.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you were a little blonde running around in your 1,004 city population, that very small town that you were part of, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be an architect. But I am not very good at drawing. And I also didn't really like math in high school. And those kind of go together. And I think that's where my interest in real estate kind of came from.
Do you think that your interest in being an architect was because of your father?
Yeah. Yeah.
It makes sense.
My dad wasn't trained as an architect, but he did architectural drawings. And so...
What did your mom do?
Well, in the beginning, my mom worked for my dad, and then they got divorced. And then my mom actually ran for county treasurer and beat the lady who'd been there for like 40 years. And so she was treasurer for a while. And then she got married to my stepdad, and they're ranchers.
Hmm.
So they have a ranch back in southwest Nebraska.
Like cattle?
Cattle.
Yeah, nice.
Mm-hmm. Nice. All right.
Cool. Okay, so Jerry, you've talked about a big, you know, transition in your life and where you live and what you're doing for a business and so forth. How can somebody that's listening to this, who like resonates with your values and so forth, like what are you looking for in your business right now that somebody, you know, happening to tune in here might, you know sure. somebody that could help you, or like what's a gap in your business where, you know, somebody might be able to help you out?
Yeah. So I have two things. First of all, my wonderful husband, like I said, is in Kearney looking at a big deal that we're going to be closing, and we're always looking for investors. And so if somebody is wants to be a passive investor in some bigger deals, we have opportunities and we'd love to talk to you. And me personally, like I said, I'm going to be coming out with a coaching program that I'm really excited about. Mike is also going to do some of the coaching with me. We're going to co-author a book. And so I would just ask for you, if you resonate with my message, to keep an eye out for that and, you know, get the book. It'll launch for free, and pay attention to the coaching classes that we do. You might want to join in on them.
If somebody's looking for coaching, what can they expect out of your program if you've got it fleshed out a little bit?
So I already have a class that's for beginner real estate investors, and 80% of my students have bought their first or next house within 3 months of taking the class, which is a really high success rate in any kind of coaching business. But the reason is because I don't just teach the how-to, I teach mindset. And so... people by the end of it believe that they can, where usually a lot of times they come in with not so sure that they can. And so I have that class. And then what's going to differentiate us in this coaching program is that it's going to be more, not just about the how-to of real estate, because there's so much out there. You guys know there's so many great podcasts and speakers and different things. What we're going to talk about is how to design your life. And so, like I said earlier, you don't just want 10,000 doors. What do you really want from life, and what's a path to get there? And so, what I've experienced, if you've ever heard like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and it starts with basic needs like food, shelter, and basic health. And then it moves all the way up to the highest level is... like elevation
self-actualization.
Yeah. And what I've discovered is that in every area of our life, we move through that cycle. And so like for me right now, my health has been very much better in the past, but I've been working on houses instead of working out. And so I'm pretty much at a basic level. Like my diet needs to increase and my workout needs to increase. So like starting somebody, that's where I need to start, you know, and then we all move through that. So I'm going to design kind of a test that shows you where you're at in each area of life and what do you need to focus on in order to grow not just one area of your life, but your whole life. And so you're coming to me because you want me to teach you how to do real estate. But in our conversation, you're telling me that you have not the greatest relationship with your wife and you don't see your kids that often. I'm going to say, okay, this is how you start real estate. And I also want you to listen on this video. That's more about relationship and family.
Awesome.
So, Jerry, I want to congratulate you. I think that you officially hold the record for our longest interview so far. So that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, that's what we are, though, right? So and thank you for the content. But if you guys missed it in this interview, I mean, Jerry is an investor, a coach, a realtor, a developer. you know, a super host. I am. Yeah, a super host now.
Airbnb.
Yeah. A short sale specialist. You know, you're a fund investor. You own a capital group called Dreamvesting. You own a property management called Orange. You own DBG Realty. You own Solid Roof and Windows. You own Schlick Construction. So you are like the Swiss. Whether the Swiss knife of real estate investing. And I've known you for lots of years and got a lot of respect for you and appreciate everything you've done for myself and everybody at this table. But thank you for finally making it to the table after you said I never asked you.
My priority is traveling.
but you've also co-hosted several RIAs for us, so we appreciate
that. I've enjoyed
it. But if you enjoyed Jerry, you enjoyed her story, please give us a 5-star review in the format you're listening to. And it's been a while since I've read a few reviews off, but just to knock a couple out here, we had a review. It said, such incredible podcast with amazing hosts, very intelligent and great listening to. So thank you for that. One says, Ted and Owen bring a refreshing perspective to a realm of real estate investing. Their combined experiences and unique insights make for an engaging listen, provide both novices and seasoned professionals with valuable takeaways. So thank you for all those 5-star reviews. We have 103 5-star reviews on Apple. Love to see more. That 1 4-star review, you're still kind of nicking at me. But loser. Just so you know, we've had enough 5-star reviews. Your 4-star doesn't matter because we have a 5-star. Rating,
Suck it. Suck it, Mr. 4-star.
With that, Owen, will you see us out?
On behalf of Dennis Bertrand, Rhea Radio, and Ted Kosh, I'm Owen Dashner, and you've been listening to Jerry Timeshares for Life, yo, Schlickberg, signing off. I'm Owen Dashner, and you've been listening to Jerry... Lost my train of thought.
Schlickburn.
Sign off. And you've been listening.
The one I take Caleb to, the guy who's causing up a storm. And at one point, he's like, the best way to make money in real estate is to buy a shithole. And Caleb. And then he said shithole. Of course, everyone at the table just busts up laughing. So then he's like, more shithole, yeah, shithole. Then he goes, like, you dig a hole and you take a shit.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. And so that's his word now.
Like, you can whisper something and they'll hear it, like, on the other side of the lake. It's fucking bananas.
So we're on the bay now. And so every now and then we
welcome to the podcast, Mrs. One Up.
No, sorry. It's the same size as Carter Lake.
That's cute. On the bay. This is how we do it.
Whatever. I've never got to live on the water.